June 9th. Commissioners present, Matt Cochran, Elena Hughes, Tina Carlson, Colleen Thompson, John Varanth, and alternate Shelley Price Gibson and Peg Smith, our clerk. So let's see, our first order of business will be approving the agenda. I will make a motion to approve the agenda for June.
I'll second that.
Any discussion? Okay, all in favor? Matt Cochran, aye.
Lenny Hughes, aye.
Tina Carlson, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
John Brath, aye.
All right, John, thank you. Aye. Second item of business is approving the May minutes. So I'd like to make a motion to approve the May minutes.
I second it, Colleen Thompson.
Any discussion or changes that need to be made that anyone is aware of?
Yeah, we have that under the members of the public present, Judy Davis, question mark. Does anyone know whether she was present or not?
Oh, I didn't miss
No.
Yes, there's a question mark there.
Huh, I didn't notice that.
I had a question mark because it was just J-U-D-I, and that's how she spells her name, but.
Well, I guess maybe I'll zoom.
Okay.
I couldn't answer that then. Now that I think about it. Jennifer Bach, right?
Correct.
Okay, so Peg, for your record, Jennifer Bach and Mark Nelson are here.
Thank you. Okay, yeah, I'll get the list of your in-house people later.
So what was the clarification on Judy?
It's an unknown.
There was a Judy on Zoom, we don't know.
Okay, I got it. All right, we can leave that.
Okay, any other comments or are we good to go? Okay, all in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
Lenny Hughes, aye.
Tina Carlson, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
John Brath, aye.
All right, thank you. And let's see, before we go into our four items, I just want to give a little context for today. So for the public and the commissioners. So we're halfway through the year. And actually today is probably the first meeting since the beginning of the year that we don't have any public hearings. So it's a little bit of a reorganization day as far as I can tell. And I want to say that, you know, we've been tasked with revising the subdivision ordinance, which is no small thing. And in the past few years, we've also done a lot with Lee's help. We've gotten the commercial development standards laid out. We've done the ADUs, we've done the RSTRs. I think we've done a lot of good work. And just last meeting, the TC approved our two sort of state handed down some changes with the subdivision and then the sort of immediate amendments that we put through. And so everything we're speaking about today, from fire code to housing, workforce housing, to lot layout standard, even to the Deer Ranch subdivision, all are topics around subdivision ordinance in a way. And we're trying to gain the necessary information to do this in somewhat of a logical way. So as we steer the ship here towards the end of the year, you know, we're stepping back a little bit and seeing how do we want to go about this. This is the whole idea of the housing forum. And these questions need to be answered so we can follow a tactical way forward to go at the subdivision ordinance. So I just want to put that out there so everyone doesn't get too lost in the details or the branches, and we know sort of we're on the same trajectory and the public is aware that this is the main thing we're up to, regardless of the monthly additions that might come in from the public and so on. That said, I don't know how you see that, Lee. Today, I want to discuss these three or four topics and then, you know, sort of figure out how we're going to go at it in a precise way. And so we're not sitting here in lost territory. Okay, so that's my context for the day. And from there, what I'd like to do is move on to the actual item on the agenda, which is to talk a little bit about lot layout standards. And here, Lee, the question is, I think the flag lots, the memo you sent out, and I hope that all the Planning Commission read this thoroughly, was very well done. The question that I have for Lee, which I think the public should also hear, is if we're not doing the ratio standard in subdivisions, and we're allowing, and we might be allowing such things like flag lots, what discretion does the PC have in controlling how a lot appears in town, so we don't get something that doesn't work? And that, you know, does the subdivision ordinance cover this stuff? Am I being clear, Lee?
You're being very clear.
Okay.
So,
thank you.
Do you want me to go ahead, Matt?
Yeah, why don't you go ahead? Then I'd like to hear from the Planning Commission.
Right,
there,
I would too. Idea.
Yeah.
So I can be pretty brief about this piece of it. I sent the memo because I wanted to establish a concrete example of how using a flag lot could benefit both the town and a landowner. And I think the memo does that pretty clearly. We're not working in Draper or Sandy, where flag lots piled up one on the other could become an issue. And we need, and the landowners who have different configurations of property and easements that affect the property and all the other things that go into it, they need flexibility as well. And the little example that I sent you in the memo is just one of numerous examples of flexibility that you can provide if you give the Planning Commission a performance standard saying, hey, the Planning Commission is going to take a look at lot layout, including lot shape, proceed site by site with the logic of that site. The problem that you have, first of all, is that you have the lot width ratio issue, and we parked that. We didn't delete it from the zoning code. And of course, there is the issue of some things are in the zoning and some things are in the subdivision, and they don't always work together as well as one might like. But I want to point out the word shape, which is really what we're talking about here, never appears in the current subdivision regulations. The subdivision regulations that you have, for whatever reasons, there's no reason to go back and look at the past. For whatever reasons, it just needs to be replaced because it doesn't address the fundamental issues. It gives the landowner a complicated procedural process to try to get through, and the Planning Commission faces, of course, the same complications. It gives a long list of application requirements, saying here's what we need to see, but then it never gives any useful standards for the design, the performance in any way, shape, or form of subdivisions. There are a couple of places here and there where you can interpret that chapter to have a standard, one of the standards, which really belongs in the zoning code rather than in the subdivision, is that you can't prohibit people from having clotheslines. That's actually the most specific standard in the entire thing. And if you want to have a lot shape standard, then something like the suggestion I made in the memo, which we would need to discuss and work through and make sure that you understand how you could use it, reword it to suit what makes sense to all of you. We're going to have to go through the whole subdivision reality with that type of thinking. We did it with commercial, right? We made a checklist of standards, and you can hand that to someone who wishes to do a commercial project in Boulder and say, here's what it needs to look like as far as the town of Boulder is concerned. You can't do that with a subdivision. You can say, here's what you put in your application. That's about it, except that you can't prohibit clotheslines. And so we're in a situation where even a really fundamental issue, which I think we all agreed on last time as the discussion went back and forth about the shape of lots, that issue isn't addressed in your subdivision ordinance right now. There happens to be that lot width ratio in your zoning, which obviously then plays into looking at a subdivision. But if I was a person trying to create a subdivision in Boulder and read chapter, 152, I would never see that there's anything about lot shape, period.
Yeah, that's true.
And so we have, it's just going to be easier, honestly, to replace it from scratch than it is to try to rewrite it. And we can do exactly what we did with the commercial standards, which is go through the issues, talk about them. We made numerous changes as we went through those commercial standards and came up with something that I think people are basically happy with. We need to do that with the subdivision ordinance, but before we do the changes in the ordinance, and I'm going to ask John to chime in here, we need to be clear on what our goals and expectations are. And that's why I think it's so important to address the housing issue as soon as reasonably possible and see where the public in Boulder comes down. We have also a zoning issue that's tangled in here because we now have a low density residential zoning district and a general use zoning district that have become essentially identical. And that was never, I think, the original intent. It just happened through the evolution of things. So that gets tangled into talking about subdivision because it determines lot size, right? And lot size is even more important than lot shape. So we need to have a conversation that lets you all either feel comfortable or not. And I can't predict the outcome of this. You guys are all more able to say what the outcome of this conversation might be than I am. Need a conversation that gives the Planning Commission direction about whether or not you're going to permit some different pattern of development in housing in Boulder. If the answer is we're going to stick with 5-acre lots and not permit anything different or much different, then that skews the subdivision work, regulation work that we do one way. If the answer is, well, we're willing to consider the other possibilities, either through some type of open space cluster development or through some other form of housing that could be permitted through changes that would be in both the subdivision and zoning regulations. We need that to be as clear as it can be. And I'm not saying that I think it's going to be crystal clear, but we need it to be as clear as it can be before we start making decisions about how to change these ordinances, because it will determine what we do with the changes in the ordinances. A future of 5-acre lots, whatever you think about that future, I don't think we have to go into opinion about it or judge it right now. It's just a different reality than if we're going to have more flexibility in how people can put housing out on the land. And they're certainly related paths, but in terms of the conversations we would have as a group about how to change the subdivision ordinance, really how to replace it, they're pretty different. And so I think the focus needs to be, let's have this community conversation about housing. Let's not worry about the specifics of the regulations beforehand. Let's just have this conversation and see where people shake out. And like I said, I can't predict how that's going to go. I mean, there's wishes and then there's realities about this, but I think that you need to take the best shot you can at giving people information about programs that have worked in places all over Utah. I mean, no further away than Escalante, you can find examples. Moab, Torrey, Park City, all over the place. And you look at those examples, you bring in some speakers who are part of the process of making those examples happen. And then you turn to your public and say, okay, where are we at? And try as best you can to gauge opinion. And how you gauge opinion is going to determine to a fair extent what you need to do in changing these ordinances. If we're going to have more flexibility for how people build housing, then that's one pathway. If we're going to keep it at 5 acres and what's the status quo, that's another pathway. It's not necessarily an easier pathway because things are, you know, subdivision regulations that don't even mention the idea of lot shape are not subdivision regulations that you can just make a few changes in. They need to be replaced even if we're sticking with the status quo. But that's my speech is we need to know where people stand in principle on the issue of housing and flexibility and in densities and forms of housing, and then we can know what to do.
Great, thank you, Lee. I'd like to hear from the commissioners on this subject.
Well, I agree totally that that's the best way to go as far as putting this together. Just trying to read the subdivision ordinance at this point is unbearable in our ability to help people through it, for sure.
So first we were talking about flag lots. And so now we're also, so now we're talking about basically the last item on the memo that we got from Lee, which is basically throwing everything out and starting over. And I kind of feel the same way, mainly because we've been working on this for so long and we're having so many struggles. It just seems like we need to start with plan A or something new and start working in that direction and see what the town wants, if that direction is something that they're willing to do. Because I just feel like we're so mired right now in the subdivision ordinance that, I mean, I've sat here for 6 months now and we just go from one thing to the next, to the next, to the next. And we can't get things figured out because it's so convoluted and it's getting really frustrating. And that's all I have to say.
Thank you, Colleen.
Well, thank you for your comments there, Lee. Just building on what you said, you know, we do have a general plan, which Matt, you've brought up many times. You know, I think we have to kind of go back to the general plan and see how our day-to-day or month-to-month work in these planning meetings is either working toward implementing the general plan or just kind of get drifting off. I think the big question we have to start with is, what are we really trying to do with the subdivision ordinance? Are we trying to avoid the incremental change that's altered communities and other scenic areas? Are we trying to prevent a hypothetical monster subdivision? Are we trying to enable landowners to make maximum profit? Are we trying to enable landowning parents to create individual lots for their children? Are we trying to preserve open space and farmland? Are we trying to create opportunities for home businesses and small-scale agriculture? And importantly, are we trying to maintain a diverse population that includes families, workers, and the elderly? And that's really when I got, when I ran for planning commission, I said that was going to be my main issue, is looking at how to make housing affordable for locals, for workers, and that's going to be a challenge. And I think that's what we should look at. I really question whether we should be trying to make it easier to chop good agricultural land into 5-acre rectangles. So I think we can be more creative. And I think we saw something, we will see something quite interesting coming from Sean Owens later in this meeting. So yes, I agree. We should definitely start with the general plan, identify the problems that we have with the current subdivision ordinance, figure out what, just as an overview, what are we trying to accomplish? And then we can get down into wordsmithing that, well, this paragraph has to be deleted and this one has to be reworded and so forth. I had one other remark here. The one thing about, we can't quite drop incremental changes because we do have some immediate things that have to be addressed. For example, the recent charge we've gotten from the town council regarding clarifying fire hydrants. So I think while we ultimately will replace the subdivision ordinance, we may have some short-term things we have to still deal with. So that's kind of my comments on this.
Thanks, John. Elena, any comments?
I don't have much to say right now. I think that in general, something that's worked well for us recently has been kind of piecing things up and taking things on step by step. I think sometimes these big ordinances can feel really massive and monstrous, and it's helpful when we kind of find a way to tackle a piece at a time. And even with this, like, it might be helpful if we talk about the lot width thing and then move on to the housing thing, because I see how they're related, but they're also quite different.
Yeah, and I agree with, pretty much everyone, but on one level, we are going to have, you know, and this is the question for you, Lee, is like, we do have some immediate changes that we need to keep running through, or incremental changes. And we need to be looking at the big picture at the same time. And so what I'd like to do as a commission is, in the next month or two, is prioritize what needs to be attended to immediately as we plan for this sort of a community forum here in towards the end of summer, and where we can glean and get all the information from the public and know at least hopefully a little better where we stand. That would be the great hope from something like that. So that's my thinking. So, for example, lot layout standards, would they be a priority? And could we create standards that we could pass on to the town council to be attended to before, you know, or do we have to untangle the knot from a different direction if we're talking about not understanding what, how to do affordable housing, and if we needed to even change the zoning? I mean, I see it is a knot where I don't quite know how to start untying it.
Let me ask everybody a question. Did everybody hear what Colleen was saying about trying to find a fire code at the beginning of all this and how hard it was to find it? I think most of you probably heard that from her. And that's the nature of the beast with which you are working, is that it is not well organized. It is not, to be quite honest, well done. And so if we say, hey, it's really important to address lot width or lot shape, I would rather use the bigger term of shape, because width isn't the only part of that conversation. We could write a good standard that we all felt good about lot shape. And I think we could probably do that fairly quickly. But then the question is, do you want to try to pop that into this mess of other requirements? I guess we could put it in there with clotheslines. Or do you want to say, you know what, we need direction. We need it from the public. We need it reasonably soon. I know the summer is never the easiest time to get things like this accomplished. I'm realistic about that, but we need direction so that we can say this is how, in a broader sense, we want to change things. And then once we have that framework, we plug things in incrementally, including lot shape and fire hydrants and whatever we come to, right? Whatever is important. And there are a lot of important things when it comes to subdivisions. It's going to be the commercial standards checklist has 20 some items. A subdivision checklist might have 60. And you know, the only alternative to that I can see, let me finish quickly here, is that you can say, well, Lee, lay it on us, tell us what the framework ought to be. I can do that. It's not hard for me to do, but I'm reluctant to have everybody in Boulder think, well, we're going to follow this particular format, whatever it is. It doesn't matter whether it's one I proposed or one that we imported from somewhere else. I think we need to have that conversation about, hey, you know, what's our goal? And, you know, John pointed out there's a general plan. You need to have those goals reflected as well as they can be in the general plan. That's pretty easy if you can be clear about your goals. So I guess I am really hesitant to make any incremental changes that aren't literally an emergency. Because I feel like we'll have to go back and change the changes to plug them into the new format. Maybe that's not a big deal. I mean, it doesn't change your intent, but it just changes the way people are seeing it. So I'm hesitant to endorse doing a change on lot shape right now, even though I think it would be an easy change to do. I think you guys would agree on what we could say pretty quickly. And we'll do that if that's what you decide. But I really want to lean on you to say we're at a cusp here, and need to have clear direction. Because yeah, we can talk about lot shape, we can get by with saying the same thing about lot shape no matter which direction we go. But once we start talking about density, start talking about access and all the elements of access, once we start talking about any other types of improvements that would be required in subdivisions, all of those topics need some philosophical, I guess I will use that word, they need a general direction, saying either, hey, we are going to be a town of large lots and residents who can afford those large lots, or we're going to make some changes that hopefully allow us to be a town with a little bit different vibe than that. And make it possible, as John said, for those people who support the underpinnings of the community, the people who do the work, to be honest, to have a chance at least to be there, or to make it possible for somebody who wants to have a small business to be there. We need clarity from the public about that before we make very many changes.
Okay.
I can't. I know that there's frustrations and I know there's individual things that affect different people. That's the case in every one of these situations in every community. But at some point, clear direction is just necessary.
Okay. So for the PC, what I'm proposing, I'm looking at a timeline here for the next few months and listening to what everyone has said, you know, so here's what I'm proposing. July meeting, we come prepared to discuss the general plan, John, which you are bringing up. And even August, we can take some time to do that and start seeing what our score is if we're addressing that element. Then towards, you know, halfway through the August, September meeting, we have our, you know, I don't know, at end of August, we can debate this. We have our community meeting and start getting feedback. and however that works. And then from that, feed that back when we have the fall to start making real priority lists and how we're going to go forward and in what way we're going to go forward. So realistically speaking, and perhaps idealistically, by the end of the year, we have a trail that we can actually follow one step after the other. That's what I'd like to see. I'd like to hear what everyone else thinks.
Okay, Matt, good points. I think one thing I would add to that pipeline, though, is that we make some specific committee assignments so that people can do preparatory homework on specific issues and maybe have some white papers drafted up that can be circulated in advance of the meeting. I think that'll help focus the discussion greatly. So I think at each month, we should be making, assignments. We should be volunteering to take on assignments to do preliminary work between the meeting on some of these topics. But other than that, I like your plan. The one thing I wanted to point out, we have three pending subdivisions somewhere in the process right now that have at least gone past conceptual plan. So we might want to do is say that if a proponent of one of these subdivisions either is causing a problem that we see or sees a problem that they'd like changed, we should then treat those as immediate needs to correct the subdivision ordinance if something is identified, either, like I say, by the Planning Commission or by the proponent of one of these pending subdivisions. And I do have some issues. I think by the time we get done with the Deer Ranch one, we'll see some issues we might want to be looking at making some immediate changes.
Well, if we identify those and consider them emergency, then that's something that we should talk about for sure.
That's a little, that can be kind of controversial, but if it's logical, but yeah, sure, I'll go with that.
It's controversial.
Changing the word.
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead. I just asked Tina what was controversial, just for my own information. And she was telling me that. Did you hear that, Matt?
Yeah. I mean, to me, I guess what sounds controversial and what John was suggesting is that then we might be paving the way for subdivisions like favoring. And I don't know if that's how other people hear it, but and I don't know the legality behind that, but that would be something that we'd have to be careful with.
I think as long as what we do is generic and applies to all similarly situated subdivisions, no. But if somebody brings up a problem, for example, saying because of since our sensitive lands ordinance, we're causing a contradiction with our fire protection ordinance, then we should address it.
Got it.
And do we need to, as we move forward here, do we take this to the town council, or do we just keep moving forward because this is something that we need to do, or do we need to talk to the town council about it as far as whether they want us to be doing this?
Well, we've been tasked with redoing the subdivision ordinance, I think, when Steve Cox was mayor from there. So okay. We're, as far as I know, we're on track unless we're
and
told
we're basically
otherwise.
Following through with that with our new mayor, correct?
Correct. And so, yeah, we have an endpoint we're trying to get to, and it's up to the planning committee to decide the best, planning commission to decide the best way and most effective way forward in that. So that's our job.
Then I think that we need to start somewhere, and we need to start soon, because it just seems so confusing in the last 6 months. We need to head a different direction and find out what the town wants.
I guess something I wonder is, I'm hearing that we want to like set up for a forum in the fall, and I wonder if we should just start working on things and encourage people to come to the meetings and give their public comments and make sure we're talking about that and publicizing the fact that this is something we're talking about right now, rather than spending months preparing for and doing a forum when really these meetings kind of are a forum and anyone can come and give feedback anytime.
I think you brought up a very good point, Elena, and I think, Colleen, you also have. A lot of this is having one-on-one conversations. For example, we are advisors to the town council, having offline conversations with the mayor, with town council members, helps us understand what are they willing to support, what's dead on arrival.
Yeah.
We need to have an open channels of communication with the town council, with stakeholders, with landowners, with potential buyers of houses. So yeah, that's the kind of preparation we need to be doing. And that's what I was saying. I think as we go each month, we should say, okay, I'll volunteer to talk to so-and-so, and somebody else will volunteer to make a list of clauses in the ordinances that are contradictory or something like that.
Yeah. Well, and Matt, the last time we did this too, and we had the groups that we still have all this information from last time, which was 3-4 years ago. We started, by telling people that we were, sending out posts saying that we were going to have these groups and if people were interested in being on them, and the turnout that we got was amazing.
Yeah. And for those who aren't aware of that, that was when I think Carlo was in town and on board. And this is 5 or 6 years ago already, Colleen. And yeah, we had 60, 70 people showing up and repeated information coming in on the, and that's really what shaped the general plan in many ways. And I thought that was valuable. And, a lot has changed since then with the Zoom boom, with everything that's going on. And so it's probably a different discussion at this point. I'd love to be able just to lean and all that happened in those meetings, but things have also changed. So just being aware of that as well.
I'll chip in here that I think that a big question is whether people understand the alternatives. It's one thing to solicit opinion. Everybody's got one or more, but are those opinions informed at all? And I think that that's why we've talked about a forum that would bring in examples from other places that are at least arguably relevant to Boulder, so that everybody can sit and listen.
I agree with that.
Wait a minute, they did this in Escalante, or they did this wherever. And here I am, I'm hearing from a person who helped do it, rather than hearing something abstract. I think that you're going to hear what a lot of people have to say when you throw out any type of concrete proposal. But I guess I share with John the opinion that Boulder is really kind of at that point on the teeter-totter where things are going to go out of balance one way or the other. And one way is that the die is cast. Boulder continues down the path that is crudely set out in the existing ordinances, which, as John described it, is chopping, this in some cases very good land up into 5-acre parcels, and not doing anything about the affordability of being in Boulder, not doing anything about the underpinnings of a diverse community, or are we going to say, hey, wait a minute, there are alternatives we could use. The USDA self-help housing program. We could do a land bank and try to raise some philanthropic money to support the land bank and make it function. We can't do any of those things with the current zoning. Okay, maybe that's a point that needs to be reiterated. The current zoning makes it pretty much impossible. The current subdivision regulations add a lot of confusion to things, but the underlying zoning makes it pretty much impossible to address providing diverse forms of housing, whatever they might be. And we just need to have the question answered of whether that's okay. And if that's okay with the town, then that's how it's going to be. If that's not okay, then what type of changes do we need to make in the ordinances to facilitate some new possibilities?
Right. So I think that's great. And let's segue out of
sure.
standard layout into the sort of housing. And it's that's a specific for too broad topic, but you know, to address what you said, Elena, and you know, the idea of having a forum as well as talking to people individually, we need to find out what people think about zoning changes. That would be really valuable information for planning commissioners to report on each month as they talk to different people. We obviously have to educate ourselves on that as well. But the other piece about having a forum with some real professionals here is it's not just ideas that are unsubstantiated, but actual ways that things have been done. And so we actually have facts out on the table. And I think both those real live examples and opinions are important. And so we need to be collecting data on both ends. And I think Elena, your strategy, and then a housing forum where we bring in those people as well would be a valuable way to get information we need. So Planning Commission, does this seem like the question here, is this a way forward that you're willing to choose and that you have time and energy for? Does this feel like the right direction to move in, or do you have something else in mind?
I'm going to voice my opinion again. I feel like we're going around in circles and that we need a direction. And so I am all for going to this new direction.
Okay, thank you, Colleen.
Okay, I've exchanged quite a few emails with Lee, and what I will volunteer to do is between now and about the middle of the month, midpoint to our next meeting, come up with kind of a white paper summarizing our discussions. I'll let Lee vet it and give any feedback, and we'll get that circulated to the Planning Commission to give us something that we can begin discussion on in July, if that sounds reasonable.
I didn't quite get, so you're going to work with Lee to bring what details to us?
We've exchanged a lot of emails about these issues.
Okay.
And pulling it back into a kind of a comprehensive white paper, just saying, here are some of the issues, here are some of the alternatives we can put on the table for consideration, to just give not really recommendations, but rather issues that we want to discuss and give it a little structure.
Great. That would be great. So zoning would be on there, I would hope. Yeah. And okay. And so the task I'll take on, because I was involved pretty heavily in the general plan, is bringing a review of that to the July meeting. I'll get you guys notes beforehand so we can see if we're on track or not, or where we are or where we're off. Any other, let's see, what other things would be helpful that other planning commissioners could bring for our July meeting to help in this discussion?
Do you think a review of what the community housing group did the last time might be helpful? Or I could also research other communities with about what they did for diversity in housing and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think both are important, but maybe just the first one, since you were a part of that, Tina, as I remember, you probably have all that paperwork. So that would be helpful, to see where we were at least 5 years ago.
Okay.
Thank you.
Are we at all interested in the past, we've talked about maybe having work meetings, but haven't done it. Are we interested in maybe having a work meeting between now and the next one? I don't really know what that looks like in terms of public meetings and stuff, but it feels to me like it might be helpful in the meantime to kind of come up with a schedule and action items and do a little organizing among ourselves so that we're not always just.
Do you want to take that on then, organizing?
Well, I guess I'm suggesting that the five of us have a work meeting if that's possible.
Oh, doing that at a separate work meeting? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I feel like we could do some organizing among ourselves in terms of like the schedule of this and getting prepared for the fall and stuff. Otherwise,
it's well, awesome. I feel like we can do it right now.
Yeah, I guess what I'm saying is I don't feel like it's really happening right now. So I would love to revisit it in the meantime.
Well, I think, you know, we can certainly schedule work meetings. They would have to be, if we have a quorum present, it'll have to be publicly noticed and recorded, but we can certainly have an agenda that says it'll be discussion with no votes to make it a less formal meeting. But I think maybe that's a month or two off, because I think we've got now three assignments here: general plan for Matt, the past community housing from Tina, and I'll kind of pull together the stuff on zoning and density that Lee and I have been exchanging. That'll give us quite a bit that we can use as the skeleton for a work meeting following July.
Yeah. And I personally, the sooner we know ahead of time to schedule, start work, I mean, I'm kind of like with Elena. If we start planning for some meetings, like start picking out some dates, like the second Tuesdays, or, you know, having our regular meetings, it's helpful to me. And maybe, you know, as far as knowing that I will start planning those meetings, because once they're on the books, then that's what takes priority. And for me personally, I'd rather have maybe Lee or John give me a direction to go. At this point, I'm not sure what to do. And maybe someone can give me direction, because I don't have any ideas myself. I know that with Carla, when we started those meetings, we took certain line items that were issues that we wanted to look at in the general plan. So, I'd like a little direction.
Okay. I think, like John was saying, with information we bring to the July meeting, that will give us some direction to follow this out. So I'm not sure there's, until we have that, I'm not sure there's anything to do with that right now, if that makes sense. The only other thing that comes to mind, and I think it's maybe a little too early, is starting to plan a time and event for a community forum and what it entails, at least brainstorming who do we want there, what subjects do we want to go after, you know, starting a loose frame, and then we can build our homeworks for next July, for this coming July meeting, the research we pull out of that and put it into that frame. Does that make some sense, Colleen?
Well, yeah. And, you know, what Carla did too was that they picked, I mean, I think there was 8 to 10 people in each group. There was a planning commissioner with each group. And, you know, and so they send out posts. If you wanted to be on a group that people, I think, basically said they wanted to be on groups. And then the planning commission also picked certain people. So, you know, we could put out, you know, something like that and start getting people ready for the idea that we're going to be doing this in the next couple of months, and who wants to volunteer or, you know, be part of it.
That's great. And so I guess my task then, you know, my invitation for you would be to start brainstorming different ways to do that. And then we can help you in the next meeting and start defining that more specifically. Is that something you could take on?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, that'll give me something to do.
Okay. Is there anything else that we should attend to for July meeting, or does that feel like more than enough?
I think we've got more than enough. Although when we get done discussing fire standards and the Deer Ranch cluster of conceptual plan, it may provoke some additional items that we have to think about.
Okay, great. Thanks, John. All right. Let's see. Okay, we're going to switch gears then. Thank you for that discussion. Thank you, Lee. I don't know if you can stick around if you want to, but I think at this point, unless you have some things to say around the fire stuff, we're We've gotten everything that you came to tell us about, so that's great.
If I may suggest, when you're looking at the fire things, you've got the Utah Wildland code that the town adopted fairly recently. And you're going to want to look at how that might or might not apply to any project that's proposed. The Uniform Fire Code that the town has had adopted by reference for, as far as I know, for many years, generally speaking, doesn't do much to affect subdivision. It is about building and site development. It's about when you actually start changing things on the landscape around. And the way your code is set up right now, it's the province of the building inspector, not the planning commission.
Okay.
So you have two different things. The wildland code, because of the way it was adopted and we changed the place where it was, so it would be with the other codes and you could see them all together. We made that amendment. But you do need to take that into consideration with a subdivision and think about its requirements, some of which apply more to individual homes, but some of which apply to subdivisions. But I urge you to just be, the other fire code is about 1,000 pages long, probably, certainly close to that. It's very complex. And of course, a lot of it doesn't apply to anything in Boulder, much less to a subdivision, but I would say that you need to leave that to the building inspection side of things. That's the way the code is set up right now. Whether that's the right way or not, I'm not judging. I'm just saying that's how it is. You know, don't think about fire protection independently of all the other issues you're trying to resolve. And I guess with that, I will say that, you know, if you end up after your discussion of the concept plan, of the thing tonight with some questions, you're certainly free to send those questions my way, but I'll take my leave and let you guys proceed.
Great. Thank you for your help. Really appreciate
Thank
it.
You all. I will, John and I will have something ready by July.
Okay. Sounds great.
Thank you. Thanks, Lee.
Thanks.
Bye.
Okay, so John, let me put it over to you to frame what's going on with the fire code, what the town council has passed down to us, and what we're tasked to do at this point.
Okay, I exchanged a couple emails with Judy Drain and also had some conversations on the phone with Jim Catmull since the town council meeting. Basically, what I've asked Judy to do or suggested she do is treat this as a land use ordinance issue, and which puts it back under planning to review and make recommendations. And that's what she's done. And the main one that Jim Catmull had brought up was the distance from fire hydrants. When I talked with him, I really learned that in his mind, he is correctly, I believe, separating subdivisions, creating new lots is one issue, and requirements for building on existing lots is a separate issue. One is really a subdivision ordinance provision. The other is really belongs in the building permits section. So once I realized that, it sort of clarified what we probably need to look at. The main issue is, Our current ordinance basically says that fire hydrants are required within a certain distance, but it has the words where feasible. Jim makes a pretty good case that we should basically delete the where feasible, because if it's not feasible to have fire hydrants, maybe it shouldn't be subdivided. That we should be creating a new subdivision where we can't have adequate fire protection. The thing I shared with Pete and with Judy is, in addition to the main International Fire Code, there's an entire NFPA standard that's water supplies for suburban and rural firefighting that addresses basically situations like we have outside town limits up on Black Boulder Mesa or out in the draw, where there is no 8-inch fire line connected to the Boulder Farmstead tank. And there is a standard for sizing fire systems like that. And it's something that we might want to consider. I did a look at some of the other ordinances. We are certainly not out of line with other jurisdictions to say hydrants are required in a new subdivision. That's many jurisdictions require that. Many jurisdictions, and I think the one that's probably the best to look at is Eastern Summit County, where they have lots of developments up in the mountains. They've got some pretty clear guidelines on what they require in terms of private water supply, so that people aren't building houses where you can't put out the fire, or worse yet, can't even suppress the fire long enough to evacuate people from the building. So I think now that we have the charge, we need to do a couple steps. So follow up the conversation with Jim Catmull, follow up the conversations with Pete. I think I can come up with some recommendations of where in the ordinances we would need to do some fixes and put that on the agenda for next month.
Okay. And would this mainly be in the subdivision ordinance?
I think the immediate one is the subdivision ordinance. And I think that this is why I was bringing this up earlier as something that's immediate.
Right.
We have three pending subdivisions, and I think one of the big issues is going to be, does it need an 8-inch fire water line with hydrants? And if so, to where do they have to be located? And
what does the ordinance say now?
Right now it has the words where feasible. And I think that's the question. And I think that's really, we can make a recommendation, but it's a political decision from the town. They could delete the words where feasible and just say hydrants are required, make it an absolute standard. What we can do as an advisory body is consider the implications. I have debated with that one because in one sense, it makes it harder to develop some lots. But then again, I'm thinking, do we want to be encouraging sprawl, or do we want to encourage houses to be where they have fire protection? It makes lots more expensive. Does that favor the investor over the local? So I think we have to think about the implications in making our recommendation, but it's really ultimately a political decision from the town. Do they want to have flexibility to not have hydrants in some cases, or do they want it to be an absolute standard? But then following that, I think it is worth us also considering, what do we require as a town for private systems, like what Anson has proposed. He's pretty darn close to meeting the NFPA standard. Maybe we want to be giving a recommendation that the town incorporate that standard by reference. The other one that has come up is the terminology. And what I pointed out to Judy, the actual terminology that's in the NFPA standards and the fire code is authority having jurisdiction, which they abbreviate as AHJ. And they have a nice long definition of that, internationally recognized. And that's probably what we need to fix in our ordinances, is to say it's the authority having jurisdiction in the town, and their emergency management plan can determine whether that's one person, two people, whether they split the duties, but that our wording that would match the national standards. So I could get that pulled together as something that we could put as a actionable item a discussion item for July and possibly for action.
Okay, sounds great, thank you. Any comments on that direction that John's taking from other planning commissioners?
Yeah, Matt, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I was listening to the town council, and they are saying the exact thing that John just said is a better definition of who has final say. And they were talking about fire marshal to building inspector, who has the final say? And I'd like to know from Pete, you know, talk to Pete or anybody in the fire department of what their really requirements are, because what I understand, the fire marshal is worded in our code, but I understand he might only have jurisdiction of so many feet from the house and inside the house compared to like a building inspector and so on. So maybe we should get communication of a better definition what their actual jobs are of approving these plans. Does that make sense?
It does. Would you be willing to research that?
Sure.
Okay. And then you could report on it in July with that. That'd be good to know. So we're just looking at what is the sort of authoritative reach of fire marshal, of building inspector, and so on. Who's the actual authority?
Okay. And I'll make sure I talk to Pete and some other people too, you know, but Pete, absolutely keep in it. So I understand if that was true, or, you know, just get a better definition of his job. Thanks, Matt.
Thank you.
Can I just say that the wildland interface code that's in our ordinances, correct? Mm-hmm. Has some very interesting information as far as how to deal with rural wildland issues. And that, I truly believe that that's where we're at here in Boulder. And I do not believe necessarily that water is going to be the main thing that can put out fires in this area. I think it's a lot of prevention. It's a lot of, and water here is not just hydrants. There's all sorts of different, you know, irrigation, whatever. So I don't know.
So it's a bigger issue, Tina. And would you say that that code is clear about that?
I think the code gives a lot of options for people who are building in different areas that don't necessarily have clear access to, you know, having a fire hydrant within 500 feet of their building.
Right. Yeah.
And I guess, you know, if you want a building or a house area that's close to, you know, that far away from, maybe you do have to be able to afford that option. But anyway.
Right. I mean, it's sort of, I think it's important. I mean, in one way, it begs the question, which is probably over-optimistic, as, you know, could we create a standards of fire safety, you know, that are, you know, include all these things.
And the other thing I think is that, you know, the closer the houses are together, the bigger the fire issue, and therefore the bigger reason to have hydrants close enough to affect the houses.
Great. Thank you. All right. Any last discussion, last words on this topic before we move on? Okay. Thank you, everybody, for your comments. And we're going to switch to fourth item on the agenda, which is the Deer Ranch subdivision. We were going to give feedback, but at the last minute, I saw that the concept plan has changed. So I haven't talked to you, Peg, but how I and John, I haven't talked to you because I know you did some work on this. At this point, I suppose we should hear what the new concept plan is. I don't know if Sean and Kelly are here, and then we can go from there.
And I'm checking audio to see if you can hear me. This is Sean.
Hi, Sean.
Hey, yeah, I'm happy to jump in if now's the right time and just give some context on where we're at.
Yeah, Peg, can you get that
I am not sure what to show, to tell you the truth. What I have on the web is the plan from last time, and I have the one page map that Kelly sent me today that shows your cluster. Is that what the one you want to put up?
Yeah, so I guess I would start with this.
Which one?
There's the last meeting that we reviewed a concept plan for the subdivision.
Okay.
When that meeting occurred, it became apparent to me, at least I interpreted, that there was quite a lot of conversation happening related to affordable land, affordable housing, and wanted to spur the conversation because when looking at ordinance, as we've all discussed here, there's not necessarily a clear guideline or template of how that would happen in the cluster development. And so I wanted to propose, separately from the previous plan, which is still getting plat. Unfortunately, we don't have the plat map completely ready yet. It's taking a lot longer to get some of the details here that have been hard to hammer down. In lieu of that, that this would at least, not this one, this is the previous one that you have on your screen. I can share, or you can put up the map that was sent earlier as a new concept you to consider as a, what it would look like. And I think it's maybe worth mentioning that, you know, in this process for me and us working through this, it's continued to kind of bring these large questions up that don't have necessary clear answers to them, like the fire. You know, there's a whole slew of questions there, and it's continued to kind of push me to say, well, maybe it does only make sense. Biggest point that if you're going to end up putting fire hydrants in, for example, then you might as well clusters together closer. And somebody's needs to mute. But so what I'd like to do is just treat this like a concept plan and get feedback, because it's very unclear still to me on some of the questions, such as what's the minimum lot size that would make the most sense? Does this solve affordable land and housing once you put all the infrastructure in, which drives the price up? What would be the rules around how you preserve the land? It, can it be just back to natural land? Is there some ordinance written about that? And what general thoughts are here? So just kind of presenting it in use of time, since we don't have the plat map ready for the original 5-acre division that we've proposed previously.
So most of the planning commission probably have not seen this, Sean. So can you just describe the difference between the new concept plan versus the old one? Give us a quick walkthrough, please.
Yeah. So the assumption is still that the road is up to standard as a true road, that it's going all the way back with a full turnaround, that you have access both in and out for fire, and that there's a maintenance agreement for all of the road. The main difference is, instead of 5+ acre lots, you have 2.5 on average, and 2.5, 2.6. They're not all equal. There's a few that are a little larger, but the smallest being 2.5. And this ridge line that exists here is very rural, dry, rocky, and not ever really going to be agricultural, where the land down below, if you were to subdivide it, you're dividing very clear, flat agricultural land. And so exploring what would it look like. And I was hoping that there would be that forum. I've got ideas on the forum, but just wanting to get as much feedback as possible. What is going to actually solve the community problems when it comes to affordable land and housing? Is this headed in the right direction or not? And or are there other ideas that can be bounced off us that we can think on?
Okay, thank you. John, you seem to have, do you want to start with this since you've been a little more deeply involved?
Yeah, okay. Kind of short notice here, Sean, but I did have a little time to look at this. And I looked at your conceptual plan and the cluster ordinance. It looks good. You meet the 50% of the total parcel being open space with 42 acres. And under our current cluster ordinance, which could certainly be improved, but just under the current ordinance, we allow you to have minimum lot size of half of what's normally required in the zone. So that 5 acres goes down to 2.5, which you've done. Our current cluster ordinance allows reducing the lot width and frontage and yard requirements, which gives you some flexibility, which you may want to use more of. There's a provision there that the conservatory that you refer to has to meet the Utah Conservation Easement Act and be acceptable to the town. So I think, you know, you're on the right track. And, you know, when I first looked at your plan, I said, this is ideal for clustering. Exactly. You're putting the housing up where it's not agricultural land and preserving the ag land as open space. So I think you're on the right track here. A couple issues I did want to bring up here. I think it's really important with this long road and all these lots that you work out some agreement that gives a secondary emergency only access. It can have a gate, a fence, but it's got to be something that the fire department could get through either for firefighting or evacuation. I think it's really not good to have that many lots on a dead end road. So you might see if there's anything you can come up with that would give a secondary emergency access. I am not clear what the status is of the 1600 South. It's platted, but I don't know who owns that road easement. Could you shed some light on that?
Yeah, so to the point of the road that comes in, I am not clear on that either. And this is a question that's come up in my point being, if we're maintaining a road to a standard all weather, does that force the issue for the entrance there? If the new landowners are coming in and buying these lots, and then there's a due, HOA due or some kind of road maintenance agreement due to keep the road maintained a certain way, will that force any issues with the entrance road that's out of their control? Does that need to come up to a standard? So I don't actually know. I was hoping that I could get the answer from somebody here.
Yeah, that's one that's, in, I guess, in your court to research out and figure out how that ties into the road, which serves a couple existing properties.
How do we find that out, by the way? Because, I mean, we're trying, and I don't understand that record. I thought it would be a town record.
Yeah, I'd start with the county records because it is definitely shown as a separate plat, long rectangle along that road. So I'd start with the county records of who owns that.
Okay.
Yeah, the 1600 South. Which is kind of on the right hand side of it, going out to Lower Boulder Road. And the parcels map shows a long rectangle, which Tita pointed out to me. So the question is that does Gibbs Smith's land, Catherine Smith own it? Does Filers own it? Does Blake own it?
But can I ask a clarifying question? So 1600 South comes off of Lower Boulder, and then when we have this blue mark here, that's where we're considering the property line. However, the property line on this yellow, as you see it go up on the east side of the property, there's a road there that's technically on the property line of here as well. Once we get the survey plat, it should show. And so there's ability for secondary turnaround potentially there too, that could come through that we just haven't really well defined yet. But because it appears on this map as if it would be on Gibbs, I think it is. But from all the research I've done thus far, it looks like it's really just that we have to move this yellow line a bit and probably put the blue line there to show it. However, I don't know that we have thought through that. We were thinking the cul-de-sac turnaround that would be large enough. We expanded the cul-de-sac at the north side that any kind of vehicle would turn around so it's not a dead end, might be smarter or at least would handle the question of the road and the fire instead of having to improve this road, which we use daily right now on the west side to change for irrigation. That's how you get to all the risers because the irrigation comes through right along that. And so that's traveled every day, but it's not necessarily being maintained to a certain code. And then it kind of comes into a field. So it would also dead end unless we expanded it, which would be again, it's going to drive the price of the property up if we drive a huge road up through there.
Yeah, well, those are issues you need to work out. I guess my concern with the 1600 South is whoever owns it may be able to prohibit you accessing from it, although you probably have a prescriptive easement, but can you improve it? I mean, those are the questions that you're going to have to answer in your preliminary application for a subdivision. So just put that down as something to be addressed. Let's see if I got anything else. Just obviously everything in the preliminary subdivision plat will need to be addressed when we're right before this comes before us for hearing. So, but I think the emergency access, the hydrants, the legal status of the 1600 South are the big issues I flagged.
Got it. Thank you.
Yeah, I'll agree with that on John. And then if you look at the preliminary plat application, you'll see basically it's not quite a checklist, but all the things from stormwater drainage to what needs to be on the plat to septic write-off from Southwest Health, all that stuff's listed there in April, should take you through all that. So our zoning administrator.
One comment I'll make, this is exactly an example of, you know, maybe why we do need to address lot shapes. I look at your lots 7 and 8, and lot 8's got the house right on the property line, you know, some flexibility on shape, which I think we could probably even under a corridor and just give you some flexibility there to, so that the lot doesn't run through the house. But we haven't looked really at sensitive lands here either to see if there's a suitable building footprint on every lot. That could be an issue, so.
How do you assess the suitable building for the current standard?
There's a 15 degree.
Yeah, the 15% slope. Yeah, but I think that was one Lee has brought up, is that we should be sure, make sure that when something is planned out as a subdivision, that it is possible to build on every lot.
Right.
It's got a site that's suitable for septic, and it's got enough land that isn't under the sensitive lands ordinance that you could build.
One note just for the record here, because on this map we're using, it's not up to date from Google. However, on a plat map, it will show differently. On lot 8 that you referenced, that building that's along that line on the south line does not exist anymore. It was burnt down. And I believe that the survey in the image will show slightly different on the west side of the property. This map doesn't necessarily show the way the plat will. It's a little off in terms of where the property line really is. So the burnt house that's on the west line is actually further from it as well.
Okay. I think you've done an excellent job. You're on the right track here.
Okay. Any other comments from any other commissioners to Sean about this newer concept plan?
Honestly, this is the first cluster development thing that's come up since I've been on Planning Commission. And since we just got it an hour before the meeting, I'm not familiar enough with the cluster ordinances to really say much.
I'd say it's a good start. We've talked a lot about clustering, and this is a good example. And thank you, Sean, for the work that you do and the fact that you're always looking at doing things a little bit different, and not different, but you showed us one concept map last month. This one is different, and I know there's a lot of lots, but affordable housing, which is what we're trying to talk about too, is going to be moving those down, and the incentive that you get for doing that and looking at the clustering incentives and things that you get in the subdivision ordinance. So thanks for looking at different things.
And Sean, I have one question for you on lot 14. It says to be deemed a conservatory. Does that mean it's under protection from development, or how does that work?
Yeah, so this large green field in the middle put aside enough of the acreage for the road to meet the standard in the roundabout on this, so that's taken away some of the acreage. But the 42.11 is the middle area that would be the conservatory.
Okay. Great, thank you.
Matt, to kind of answer your question, our cluster ordinance explicitly states that to be able to get these reduced size lots and reduced setbacks, 50% of the parcel has to be designated as open space that is under a permanent conservation easement that meets the requirements of the Utah Conservation Easement Act.
Yeah, great. Yeah, that's what I was getting at. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, and so this is an 80-acre land that meets that standard, and the ordinance would just have to be written into it for the easement to match exactly what you just said.
Yeah, perfect. Any other questions for us, Sean? Anything else you need to know?
I apologize if I missed this already, but where are you thinking you'll put hydrants back there, or where do we stand on hydrants?
So the hydrant conversation in this situation is, again, it's an unknown because you have to take an application in, put a check down, hold the check in reserve, and have a number. And so that started off with the lots that we showed before, which was half of this. And then you got to get a survey, which we still haven't gotten done by engineers in order to rough estimate. We've rough estimated from two different areas where the water pipe would be ran, either from the north up by Mark Nelson's area, I believe, and or from the south along Lorville Road. And the cost is significantly prohibitive at this point and would require having to increase the price quite a bit and make more lots. So we're still looking at well drops instead, potentially, to be able to get to the same ability and need to get the answers on that still. And so we don't have the comparable that would determine whether it's what the real cost would have to be passed along to the land buyer yet. Assuming that the line came in or that the well was there, you would have your water main on each one of these with a head meter from the town, and then you would have a hydrant. And ideally, you're not developing all that until somebody's ready to come in and you have a stub out. And so then you're being able to place it, but it would most likely come along the road where the current utilities run underneath and alongside the roads. This would bring in electric, internet and water all kind of along the same areas based off of the standards in order to maintain them in the future. That's where it would most likely come. So we haven't marked them on this as we have on the others. And this map will show where they would be there. I think they're kind of notated in these purple marks.
Okay, and do you have a sense of lot 8 and lot 9, for example, just because they look about average, do you have a sense of what the length and width, give or take, in feet is of those lots?
I don't remember, but I know they're beyond the standards that you met, that you use, which are where we originally started 26 months ago, was just wanting to sell 5 acres. And we ended up with getting pushed back based on needing to make it a rectangle versus because of those lengths. And so we measured all those out and then came back to it. We can measure them pretty easily on a map. I just don't have it in front of me.
Okay.
They're approximately 500 feet wide, I believe.
Okay. Yeah. I was just thinking in terms of the 400 feet, the lots being located within 400 feet of a fire hydrant. I was just wondering how many fire hydrants would have to be back there to meet the current
standard. Right. And that's a great question, because I think in that situation, you would look at putting one per every two lots on the property, right? Right along the border of each one, right? You don't necessarily need one for every house, I don't think. The other things that have been interesting to look at is when you think about the point that was made earlier, I agree with, which is the closer the homes are together, the more fire risk there is you have to prepare for. Jimmy says 600 feet per hydrant that you have. So we'll have to come back to that in the chat. But the question then becomes, okay, at what standard are you preventing fire to spread versus what's the risk? Are you trying to prevent the home from burning all the way down? Can you even have response time to get there in time to do that? Or more likely, are you looking at ways that you can prevent the fire from spreading from one to the other, creating a much larger forest fire, for example? And that's an interesting question when you start looking at some of these where there's a lot more rock and ridgeline, and versus if you put them real close together, depending on how you build. So we've just been looking at if required for the standard of the fire hydrant versus the well, and if it becomes unfeasible per the way that I'm doing the math, which is just, is it economically going to be feasible to pass that along to the buyer or not, then we would kind of come back around if needed to discuss it.
Great. So Sean, are you pretty clear the direction you need to go?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you for your concept plan.
Yep. And if anybody ever has any ideas or thoughts in from the community, I don't know how quick it'll take to get some of the feedback from the forum. I think the biggest question is, how do we define affordable land and affordable housing? What is that? Is this even going to make a difference? Is 2.5 acres going to cut it? You know, or are there other creative ideas? Because the last thing that would make sense to do is get close to the mark, but not actually achieve the goal and have spent all the time. And so any feedback there that can be gathered, or ideas as far as how to match conserved land with affordable land and housing, you know, I think then it's a lot easier to start to work towards how can you build community centers and proper utilities and more desirable places that are affordable. And so all feedback welcome at any point in time.
Definitely. And I think we'll be trying to iron out more details and real world examples from that in the next few months. So we'll get back to you.
Awesome.
Okay, thank you. Okay, John, did you have something you wanted to circle back on? You had mentioned something a little while back, yeah.
This is examples of some of these issues that we may find as this develops that we can facilitate for affordable housing by working with Sean to consider some changes to our current ordinances as this evolves. So that's probably where we'll circle back, is that, you know, something like this is highly desirable in that it meets general plan goals like preserving open space. But there are some things in our ordinances that are making it difficult for him. And I think this may take some discussion and creative thinking. One point I will just bring up for the record. The biggest thing to make housing affordable in the long term is deed restriction, which is allowed, where there are permanent restrictions on the property that limit how it can be sold or who it can be sold to. That, I think, has got to be a key. If we're going to give credits for affordability, there's got to be some guarantee that it stays as affordable housing.
Yeah, I think that's a deed restriction is a really important topic for that housing forum. And so, yeah, it'll be one of the major ones.
We can look at things like where Park City has done, where they have housing that is restricted to local workers. They have housing that's restricted to moderate income, which is generally defined as 80% of the county mean. So those are important things that we'll have to consider. And to make it feasible, you could hear Sean bringing up concern about cost. We could create in the ordinances financial incentives to offset the burden of making deed restrictions. So we're going to have to do some big, real educating of ourselves, talking to experts, inviting experts to present what other communities have done. But I think this is something we can make some progress on.
Great. Thank you, John. So we're going to move to upcoming business for July. We had a list and it's already slipped my mind, but let's see.
Matt, can I make one more comment to Sean?
Is he still there? Yes.
Is Sean still here? Yes. Sean, I just wanted to mention, because I know how expensive the process of getting surveys is, so I just want to make sure you're thinking of it from the beginning. You mentioned 600 feet for hydrants, which I think Jimmy probably said in relation to a fire code, and I just wanted to reference you to 152.041H in our ordinances, and that's where it says 400 feet. So you may want to look into that, because for surveys, it'll make a difference if you have to go back and change it to 400 from 600.
Okay, yeah, we'll definitely look at that. Cool. Thank you.
Matt, I have your list.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so you guys, first of all, you talked about John would produce a white paper that would summarize the zoning and density considerations that he and Lee have discussed. Matt, you've taken on reviewing the general plan. I assume the goals.
Yes.
General plan to bring to the next meeting. Tina is going to review what occurred at the community housing groups that happened like 5 years ago or so. There were some great sort of conclusions that came out of that need to be reviewed at least.
Okay.
Elena, let's see, let me read my notes.
I'm not sure that I got a chance. Yeah, you did.
You were talking about a work meeting, talking about how to organize the forum. Between you and Colleen was going to brainstorm ways to put a forum together. So there's different ways, different kind of structures that you could accommodate to do what you want to do with the forum. I guess that's maybe both of you sort of taken that on. My notes are not super clear there. So that's related to the housing discussion. John wants to work on discussion on the NFP. Is that National Fire Protection wording?
The fire, the fire code, or the fire code changes, or the ordinance changes regarding fire protection as charged by the town council.
Yes, and you were specifically referring to the authority who has the jurisdiction. The wording in the NFP is what you said.
Yeah. And then Shelley was going to focus on the authority of the different authoritative reaches of building.
Right.
Inspector. Powers, yeah.
Like we have kind of a powers and duties section in the ordinance. So this would, if she looks up that, just Google powers and duties of what we have right now, a fire marshal. And we don't have that for building inspector because it's a county thing, but that's what she's going to research.
She can find that out through the county. Yeah.
Yeah. That's actually all I have written down as far as that discussion. Then there would be the follow on to Sean's plan, whatever. I'm asking that Sean and or Kelly at least provide a little heads up before the meeting of where you're at in the process. I'm not the one who needs to see the documents. That would be the zoning administrator until she signs off them as complete. I really am not interested in seeing a bunch of pieces, but it'd be interesting to know where you're at in the process. I do not know where Anson Fuller subdivision is going to be.
Okay,
so in town and maybe attending a meeting.
Yeah. So those are tentative and not on the table unless we get specified notice beforehand. And what are we at, Pig? We have to have at least 3 days notice with documents for us to review such things. So the Monday before our Thursday meetings, all that information needs to be in and to the planning commissioner members for us to review it.
Well, it's actually more than three. So on on an application, this is not just any old documentation or memo.
Right.
This is a full-blown application that's probably going to be fairly large. We're talking subdivision. So April has a 12-day before the meeting. That gives her a couple days. And we have a 10-day, I get the documents from her 10 days before the meeting that allows me time to get them distributed to you. And then you have that period of time to review an application.
Okay. So we'll know towards the third week of the month whether we're going to have any more subdivision discussion on the table.
Yes.
Okay, perfect. Anything else? Do we miss anything, Planning Commission?
I have a question for Peg. I'm thinking about the ordinances and that town council last week just approved the stuff that we passed on to them. And I'm wondering if you know who changes that or when those will be updated. Just because there's so much subdivision stuff going on, it's confusing to look at it when it's some of it's old.
There was just the one word change in the greater clarity ordinance, changing from homes to lots. The one word change that the town council did on that ordinance, the property adjustment one was approved, and it's actually in my ball court to send that on to the codification people to get them integrated. But what I guess I haven't done yet is put the approved version up online where you could actually see it right now on the website. And so before it gets codified, you will be able to see the ordinance, but.
Okay. Give us a sense of how long it takes to show up in, how long it takes to like update in American Legal.
Well, I'm not sure if maybe Judy knows, they're on some kind of a contracted schedule, and I honestly don't know if it's a couple times a year or every quarter, I don't know. But okay. I would send them to, they kind of pile them up until their, whatever that period of time runs out, and then they codify what they've received. So I can't tell you exactly, in other words.
Got it, thanks Peg.
Just kind of one comment here. We had that incredible flurry of emails in the last 24 hours. And I'd just like to go on the record and say that I'd prefer that the Planning Commission not be copied on all these inter communications between an applicant and the zoning administrator and PEG, because really it's the staff job to vet that and send it to us when it's ripe for discussion. I had to kind of sort through a whole bunch of emails to figure out which one actually had the attachment with the plat of the cluster. I also agree that really Peg and April should be enforcing that people give clear dates, page numbers, descriptive file names on the submittals, so we know which one is which. On putting subdivision things on the agenda, we have a conceptual somebody can bring to us at any time. Basically, it's informal. So what Sean did tonight was proper, but at the next stage, which is the preliminary application, it needs a public hearing, which means really we don't have it on our, I guess somebody could always ask for another conceptual discussion, but if it's a preliminary application, it has to be deemed complete by the zoning administrator in time to be posted 10 days before our meeting for public hearing. So even 12 days is a little tight. But I'll leave that up to April to set how much time she needs to process and deem something complete.
Yeah, agreed. Thank you, John. Okay, let's. I'm going to open the floor for final public comments. If you have a public comment, please state your name and either step up to the mic or wave your hand virtually, and we'll listen to what you have to say.
Pete did have a comment earlier and during the fire discussion. I don't know if he still wants to make that or not. Pete Benson. Other than that, I'm not seeing any hands on Zoom.
No one's fit. Yep.
We have someone here. Hi, this is Jen Bach, and I was just asking a question. So this discussion on the fire hydrants that we're talking about, this is about strictly subdivision and not individual building on an already established lot, or is it about buildings on established lots? I'm a little confused.
I think as I'm looking at what Jim brought up, his concern is requiring hydrants on established lots. However, there is also wording in our building permit section. I mean, he's concerned about subdivisions, new subdivisions, but there's also stuff in our building permit section about building on established lots. So I think what we should, as an advisory body, we could give the town council recommendation on, is everything okay, or do they need to consider making changes to for better clarity on established lots as well.
Okay, thank you.
Who was asking that question? I didn't hear.
Buck.
Oh, okay. And I see Pete's hand back up here.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
So on the, you know, what I do as the fire marshal, for a building permit, I just look at access to the property. Basically, I'm looking at roads and that sort of thing. And the building inspector basically deals with the building itself, if there's any new building. So that's the division that I've been going by. And for a subdivision, I make a recommendation. The town council gets the final say about, you know, what's required. And in general, my attitude, I mean, there's actual language in the subdivision ordinance about fire protection. And I'm looking at roads more than water, but for like Sean's larger subdivision, we definitely would need to, you know, I think we'd have to require all the, you know, all the water flow stuff, just because there's so many lots and they're so close together. And it's just been kind of a subjective decision about that, about what's feasible and what's not. And that's, you know, it's basically in my mind.
I have a kind of a question for you. The Wildland Code also has provisions dealing with fire breaks, exterior construction materials, and so forth. So you would leave the calls on that to the building inspector. Is that what you?
Yes, in general. I mean, basically, the WUI code doesn't change what I would, you know, think about as a, you know, when looking at a site. The building inspector, the county already adopted the WUI code. So people are, you know, he's already used to that. And the WUI code basically gives the inspector a checklist and a point system to decide how, you know, how fire resistant the building needs to be. And that's, you know, on a broad sense, that's how it works. In general, I think if you're thinking about changing ordinances about fire stuff, referring to other standards, you know, published standards is a great idea, instead of like putting numbers in there, like the 400 feet. I think it's always better to refer to a standard than to put in numbers like that. So that's basically what I have to say. Thanks.
Great. Thank you, Pete. Any other comments from the public? Okay, last chance. And I will make a motion to close the Planning Commission meeting.
Second that.
I think we might have comments first.
No, we don't.
Yeah, it's the formal hearing. We still on the motion?
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Okay. All in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
Manny Hughes, aye.
Tina Carlson, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
John, aye.
Okay, commissioners, thank you for your time and your patience and your comments. And Peg, thank you. And we have a bunch of work we can all do with a smile till we meet in July.
Thanks, Matt.
You bet. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks.
everybody.
Night.
Good night, Mark. Good night, Jennifer.
Good night.